Welcome to episode 148 of The Lab. I'm your host, Brad Barton. There are links available on the show page about today's topic, and you can find them by visiting thelabwithbrad.com. What killed the woolly mammoth? Was it changing climate? Was it overhunting by humans? In at least one case, it was thirst. In fact, that particular population was the last population of living woolly mammoths. Most of the mammoths died off 10 to 14,000 years ago, along with the rest of what's called megafauna. This is known as the Quaternary Extinction Event. However, rising sea levels had trapped two small populations of mammoths on a couple of isolated Arctic islands, where they survived until as late as a mere 4,000 years ago. As the sea levels continued to rise, the area of land they had available shrank. The plants that they ate were still available, but more and more salt water infiltrated into the groundwater supply, and less fresh water was available. Until at last, the last of the mammoths died. It wasn't the remains of the mammoths that told that story. It was the remains of microfossils. Generally speaking, something isn't a fossil unless it's more than 10,000 years old, so some of what they looked at is a little too young. They used various spores in order to tell what sort of vegetation was growing at different time periods. They also looked at a form of algae called diatoms. Diatoms are single-celled algae that form a shell around their cell body of silicates. These small, stony shells are shaped differently for different species. Older sediments include diatoms that are associated with freshwater. But closer to modern times, they are replaced by species that prefer shallow, salty water. Microfossils fall into several different categories. There are pieces of larger creatures, such as fragments of teeth. There are small, organic, single-celled creatures. And there are single-celled creatures that form stony remains. Some small, single-celled creatures form little disks of calcium carbonate. These can interlock to form a sphere around their single-celled bodies. They are very small, less than 25 microns. But there can be enough of them to form large chalk deposits, like the White Hills of Dover. Foraminifera form shells around their single-celled bodies, called tests. Some of them simply cement grains of sand, or whatever's handy together, by using sticky organic chemicals. Others can deliberately grow small shells made of calcium carbonate, magnesium carbonate, or silica. Most foraminifera live on the bottom of the ocean. There are a smaller number of species that float around in the water column, acting as plankton. Different species of microfossils have come and gone over time. Identifying which species is in the particular layer or strata of rock you are examining can let you know about when that rock was formed. Different species prefer different habitats, so they can tell you things like whether or not you're near the mouth of a river or in the middle of the abyssal plain. Microfossils can provide information about what sort of plants were growing, the climate, the temperature, the era, and the chemical composition of the atmosphere and oceans. Paleontology isn't always all about the big bones. Sometimes you learn the most from the least. See you next time.